like, whenever I hear people, particularly white people, call black women incompetent, it's like, oh, you scared?
Yeah.
As I say, shook it.
Yeah. This made me really fucking furious.
How do I take that rage and use it?
When they announced that he dropped out, I just had a whole panic moment. I was at the beach. I was crying at the beach. Crying at the beach. And then I got in that water, and I cleansed myself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka, Rockaway Beach, and I just kept singing my girl's song, Dory. I was like, just keep swimming.
That's Dory, the Negro spiritual. Dory,
that's the Dory Negro spiritual.
Some of us, maybe we want to be cute and nice. It's not a bad thing, but that niceness is fake. Kindness is where it's at. Niceness is just
fake. Oh, that's a word. Yeah,
that's a bar.
That's a whole word. Welcome to Wait a Minute, a show where we take the conversation out of the group chat and tell the truth and kiki with the girls. I'm Ashley Allison. Speaking of friends, I'm joined by comedian, actress, writer. Oh, she fancy with her titles. Joelle Nicole Johnson. And today we have a very special guest, strategist, visual artist. I heard she made clothes. She was telling me she was making clothes. Abiola Agora. So let's get straight into it. All right. So Kamala Harris is, I shouldn't say this, but I call her KK.
Ooh, KK?
That's my aunt KK. Vice President Kamala Harris is the presumptive Democratic nominee for president. Did you ever believe that you would see something like this happen?
I never thought we was gonna have a black president. So that was already crazy to me. I didn't think we was gonna have a black Disney princess. So this
not
to
Tiana.
Me, no, I mean, Tiana, I can't believe that happened. So this is crazy to me. I feel like an old spiritual ancestral black person right now, just with my pride. I'm very excited about this moment. I never thought we'd ever make it to here.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I actually thought we would, to be honest.
Okay, girl. She said, yeah.
She's more positive than I am.
If nothing else, you're talking about a group of people who have literally, like, started from the bottom, doesn't even begin to touch on it. So to me, it feels like, you know, anything that we want to be feasible will be feasible. So I'm not surprised. I am honestly a little bit surprised that it's Kamala Harris, because I feel like I would have looked at a different profile potentially for that being the person that would be able to, you know, make that mark. But no, I'm not surprised at all. It's iconic and it's time.
I just keep sitting in Shirley Chisholm.
Oh.
And I'm like, yeah, right? Like, yeah. And I even like shout out Geraldine Ferraro and Hillary Clinton. It's like, sometimes it doesn't take a whole nother lifetime to realize something. And so I am surprised, but I'm not surprised. I also think it's the thing we need in this moment. And there's still like less than 100 days to get this done, and she has not become the president. So people have a lot of work to do if that's the person they're gonna be supporting. But I'm like a 50-50 split.
Yeah, that's perfect. Surprise, not surprise, swing vote.
Swing vote, right. Undecided. Our American electorate, basically, as we speak.
More productive than them already.
See, we are not a monolith.
We are not a monolith. We keep trying to tell y'all. Not even black women.
Yeah.
Okay, so black women lead the way, raising more than $1 million. Okay, so wait. Let me just run this back, how it all went down.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Win with Black Women is something that started in 2020. It started back when they wanted to have a black female vice president. Mm-hmm. So Joe Taka, Karen Finney, Donna Brazile, Manyan Moore, I'm probably missing some folks, handful of folks got together and said, this is what we're gonna do. And Kamala Harris ended up being it. Then when the president made good on his promise to nominate Ketanji Brown Jackson, they reinvigorated that effort and helped get her across the finish line. I think they were still doing the calls, but not like as regularly. All I know is I was talking to my mom and she was like, at 1 o'clock in Ohio, okay? 1 o'clock is when Joe dropped out. She's like, but do you think Kamala can win? By 10:59, I'm on set and in CNN and she talking about, I'm on the Win with Black Women call.
Yes.
And then I get upset at 1 a.m. and I call her like, hey mom, I'm done. She's like, I'm still on the call. I got to call you back. I'm like, what in the world?
Yes, we was on that call till 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
What time did you get on?
I got on in the beginning. So it was the first 1,000. That was the first thing. That was like 1,000 people was Zoom's capacity. Somebody called the COO of Zoom and they were like, get your technicalities together. And it went to 3,000. So I was in that 3,000.
Okay.
And then it just opened up, and I think capped out about 44,000.
Yeah. Every like 15 minutes, it was like 1,000, 3,000, 10,000, yeah. 15, 18. And then by the time I was on air, it was 44K. I was like, okay.
It was so beautiful. Magical. It was one of the blackest things I've ever experienced in my life. I was eating crab legs and fried chicken while I was watching, so... You know, how black are you is the question. I might win today, but it was what my soul needed, because I had been crying earlier in the day. Like when they announced that he dropped out, I just had a whole panic moment. I was at the beach, you know, and I was crying at the beach, crying at the beach. And then I got in that water and I cleansed myself in the waters of Lake Minnetonka, Rockaway Beach. And I just kept singing my girl's song, Dory. I was like, just keep swimming. What do we do?
Negro spirituals.
Absolutely.
That's Dory the Negro spiritual.
That's the Dory Negro spiritual. So when I got on that call.
Dory.
Listen, there was about 34 pastors, maybe 5 benedictions at the end. We couldn't even get off. It was literally a church service.
And they literally passed the plate.
Yeah.
They raised $1.6 million in like 3 hours.
Yeah.
So it's like a testament that when we rally, we can move forward.
We can move mountains.
We can move mountains.
And Zooms.
I'm saying, she called the COO.
The COO was like, typed in some things.
Get it together.
Yes, get it together.
And then the following day, the black men, mm-hmm. they were like, we're not going to do this by ourselves.
Yeah.
We going to have your back. And then yesterday, the Latinas. And I think today was white women. And then tomorrow are AAPI. Yes. And then Sunday, I think, are white men.
Whoa.
So let's talk about that diverse coalition that is going to be needed to, for anyone, really, mm-hmm. Trump or Kamala Harris win. Where we often talk about, and Abiola, I would love to hear you chime in on this. We often talk about black women being the backbone of democracy and saving it time and time again. Mm-hmm. We tired, y'all. We don't want to have to do it by ourselves. So how do we call in some of our 53% white women who voted for Donald Trump in 2016 to this moment?
I think, and not to put the pressure back on black women, but when I thought about that call, I heard about it and I was like, okay, cool, like so many numbers, but then I had a couple of folks who I knew in different avenues, a couple of folks that were in trans spaces, a couple of folks in the abortion spaces who were not invited on the call and who were not thought of, I think, immediately to be put onto that call. And to me, that was kind of like a big ringer of like, there's a lot more work to be done here, you know, regardless of how somebody feels in terms of like, you know, being pro Kamala, being, you know, anti Kamala, whatever they feel. It's important to acknowledge the fact that there were a lot of people that were not there that, if you're running the type of robust campaign you need to, they have to be there. And I think after you're able to make that space what you're saying you want it to be, then I think you can begin to pull more into calling on white women to do more, because when it's not that we have to lead more and more and more and more, but I think whenever they come into a space and they're like, ooh, there are a lot of people here that maybe I didn't even think should be here. Those who are already committed to beginning to kind of do better, you know, kind of try and kind of commit themselves to that work will see it, and they do better and they ask more questions. And on top of that, I think it's so much about not being nice. Like, I fight this a lot online. I will never forget. I made a video responding to somebody because I'm an explainer. I break things down. I literally had to teach my classes at like 7 years old because teachers wouldn't teach things correctly. So I'm an explainer. I love it. And another black woman creator who I don't even remember who it is right now, I think they took a break from social media just for the last couple of years, but they had somebody ask them a question that was like low-key disrespectful, but they didn't realize it was disrespectful. So I made a video being like, hey, XYZ. And he was like, well, she could have been nicer. You know, thank you for being nice. And I said, mm-mm.
No, that's not what we're gonna do.
I said, she doesn't owe you that.
No.
I said, she doesn't owe you the nicest. I said, I chose to explain this and I made it very clear that this is how I was doing and this is why I was doing this, but you're not going to try and then use that to disrespect her. And so I think being able to allow for the black women who are louder, being able to allow and make space for the black women who don't fit our comfortable narratives is how we also call more white women into action. Because at the end of the day, like, I have cousins from South Central LA, it's where my mom's from. And one of my cousins will come into a space and she will curse everybody out in it for doing anything wrong. And I will fully let her And if I know that I want something to be done a certain way, and I want to make sure that all Black women are going to feel included in something, I make sure people like her in the space, people myself are in the space, because she'll call on the white woman that does something weird. And she'll be like, hey, like, these girls aren't going to say anything to you because they're a little bit nervous, but I will.
Yeah.
And you're either going to do it or you're going to leave. And so I think it starts with us being able to embrace each other more, thinking about that more, and then also allowing for ourselves to be less nice, because some of us, maybe we want to be cute and nice. It's not a bad thing,
yeah,
but that niceness is fake. Kindness is where it's at. Mm. Niceness is just,
ooh, say that's
that.
A word.
That's a bar.
That's a whole word.
I tattoo that on my forehead like Amber Rose.
Wait, say that again.
Niceness is not where it's at. Kindness is where it's at.
Put a beat up behind that one.
Okay, I'm gonna make this personal for a second.
Yes.
I had to be kind last night.
Ooh, yes.
But not nice.
Yeah.
And I think we're gonna, and I was on CNN, I was being constantly interrupted, which often happens. Sometimes I'm called names, angry, frustrated. And I can see your humanity and still read you. Ooh. And I feel like that is gonna be the season that many of us are walking into for the next 100 and so days, as we see a Black woman rise in power and to the top of the ticket. It's like her success, success begets success, but haterade begets haterade. And so as she gets more attacked and called the DEI candidate, so are we, and we constantly get called into question. So let me ask you, I actually posted something. Somebody referred to her as incompetent.
Yes.
And I said, see, this is what I'm talking about. Y'all was all about this unity stuff a couple weeks ago at the RNC, and now you want to call incompetent. You can talk about somebody's record without calling them a name. And when you, especially when you go after a Black woman being called incompetent, there's some racial undertones to it. So without, if it triggers you, please don't do it. But I put a post out and I said, hey, tell me the story when you've been underestimated or been disrespected. And you know it's because you're a Black woman.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they calling her a childless cat lady, which I took a lot of offense to because I'm childless, but I don't like cats. So what are we talking about? Call me the childless, eats at Michelin star restaurants on a Tuesday for no reason lady. Call me the childless, sleeps till noon on the weekends and sometimes during the week, lady. You know,
that's
other
right.
things is what you can do, because just because we don't got kids means I'm miserable. I'm having a great time.
Call me a childless dog lady, because I'm allergic to cats, for that matter.
I'm allergic to cats and dogs.
And I got a dog.
I'm a childless plant mom lady. How about that? I'll be crushing the plants, baby, watering them bitches and everything.
So, keep them soiled.
You know, and we're just used to this as Black women. I've had to do that, you know, back when I had jobs. I don't have those anymore. But when
no Black jobs?
I have many Black gigs.
This is a Black job though.
This is a black job. But I'm talking about some 9-to-5 where I actually have to go into an office. I was never good at that because I couldn't take those things that would happen. So somebody would say something crazy to me, call me something outside of Joyelle Nicole Johnson, I'm gonna say something to you.
Yeah.
And I've been fired. And I earned it every time.
I hear you. Mm-hmm. I see you.
Was it an explicit firing or a gentle
it's
firing?
It's like, oh, girl, you got to go.
I mean, sometimes, and one time they called me, they were like, you have to come in so that we can have the meeting about being fired. I was like, no, I'm not taking the train to Midtown Manhattan.
To be fired.
To be fired.
That's what you're talking about. We're done here.
That's disrespectful.
I'm never coming back.
Oh, my God.
What about you, Abiola? Have you ever been underestimated?
Every single day.
Chow, you dropping bars.
Like, and I know you all deal with that too. I think it's one of those things where every time you're in any space, even our own spaces, because as Black women, we underestimate ourselves because of the way the world underestimates us. So sometimes we can cause harm to each other because we're like, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I left really bad work circumstances and professional circumstances a couple years ago when I was living in DC because I had a couple of mentors, some friends, and overall within a few months of a time period, I had people that were like mocking me in meetings. Like I had a young lady, God, I'm 26.
You're 26?
I had another Black woman, because we're not about to call people young lady like I'm a grandma. We don't do that to myself.
Yeah, I was gonna say, we're like 20 years older than you.
Yeah.
And we still consider ourselves young ladies, to be clear.
I'm like, I can't be clear.
Young lady.
Like, just bring me a cat too at this point.
Yeah. I'm like, she on the wrong show. She has to be on the baby show.
Yeah, the 60 and up. But she like was on a call and she like cursed me out. She was like, I pay you because I was on a contract with her. You know, she was like, you know, blah 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 this, and I hung up on her.
I thought that's right. I'm not listening to this.
And I had somebody else call me in the org and be like, oh, like you just don't know how to be in professional spaces. Like you're whining. This is a man that was a lawyer at DC, and he was like, you're whining. Like grow up. And I was like, I may be young, but I've been doing this work since I was very literally like 15. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you're not gonna tell me that I have to be disrespected in order to do that. And so not only did I leave, I closed out that contract so that I wouldn't have any issues. And I decided to actually move back home with my parents in January in Texas, because I told them, like, from a spiritual level, from like an interpersonal level, everything in my body, from somebody who has lived and dealt with so much trauma, who has disabilities from that trauma, I was like, I need to be able to work for myself and do the things I do and share what I need to share without repercussion of that. It's part of the reason why I was able to start doing the videos online that I did, because I was like, you know, I want to be able to say like, hey, like this is wrong and you're not going to try and ruin my livelihood over it, because you're just not going to pay me. I'd rather have no money coming in and do what's important to me. And that's a privilege, but I'd much rather be able to do that and give my life to the people than to work in a place that's expecting me to mistreat myself and others around me. So I feel like that's kind of one of those things of consistently being undermined and underestimated and really just having to like push through on a daily basis to, you know, make space for myself and other Black women and, you know, all people that kind of need that freedom as marginalized people.
I'm smiling probably on the outside, but also on the inside, because it's so encouraging to hear you say that at 26, because I remember when I was 26 and didn't have the ability, space, or climate to navigate the world like that. And it's encouraging to see younger women.
Yes.
Not young women.
Young lady. So I will keep this as discreet as possible, but I think the thing about being the term incompetent really irks me, because I was in a position where I made a sacrifice to go do this because I believed that I could help change the way something was going. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna leave this very comfortable position I'm in and do this for democracy. And one time we were in a meeting, an internal meeting, and two colleagues were caught chatting about me on screen, because they were sharing screen, and basically were like saying, I have no idea what I'm talking about, I have no idea what I'm doing, and didn't realize that like I could see it, but also everybody else could see it. And so of course I had to call them out, I wasn't gonna pretend. But it also ended up being like, at the end of the day, like they were the ones actually failing at their jobs. And right. So that they were using their failures to project on me. And again, it wasn't like a bias analysis. It's like the numbers were clear that like I was winning, I was crushing it, and I continued to crush it and save democracy. And they were not. And so it's just like, whenever I hear people, particularly white people, call Black women incompetent, it's like, oh, you scared?
Yeah.
As I say, shooketh.
From the depths of your soul.
Like, you see something in me that some people call it Black girl magic, but you see the excellence that I bring, and I'm making you be better at yours. You should say thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you for making me better.
Yes.
I'm helping you for free. Most people have to pay for this, okay?
Yes, my presence is
If
I may, this reminds me of, I literally had a conversation with somebody of this the other day, because in college, I went to George Washington University and then I transferred to Boston University. And I had a philosophy, law, and race professor who was a white man, which was already—
In Boston?
Yes, Boston University. And he would like get up and teach factually inaccurate things. So there were multiple times where he was like, this man was killed by the death penalty. And I was like, sir, that man is alive. He did an interview last month. And he'd be like, are you sure? And I'm like, please use
Like I said, your Google ain't my Google sometimes.
He was like, the youngest person killed by the death penalty. So I was like, actually, it's George Stinney, and there are potentially some other people. And it got to the point where I tried not to do it in public. I was like, I'll try and send you a little email. Yeah. But he started giving me B minuses on essays.
Oh, you petty B minus.
Because couldn't give me a C. But he gave me B minuses, and when I wrote to the dean of the school, the dean was like, oh, well, maybe you're just not. He didn't use the words incompetent, but he said basically maybe my work wasn't up to par. And I was like, I could teach this class in my sleep.
Yeah. Like, I am actually. I'm teaching it for him.
You know, like, I shouldn't have to, like, you shouldn't be saying things that are factually inaccurate. It's like a, makes me furious when people say, like, it's like,
you shouldn't do that in kindergarten. You shouldn't do it.
Or when you're running for president or being the president.
Yeah, all these things. Yeah. I'm like, once a class, at least you're saying something that's incorrect. And then you're gonna, I got a B minus in the class overall.
Yeah.
So it pulled my GPA down. But that just, like, what you just said reminded me of that. Cause I'm like, you get backlash for trying to make a space better, not just for yourself, but for others.
For the whole.
You know, because these kids are gonna go to law school potentially, and then they're gonna say things that are wrong.
And I'm proud of you being so young, able to advocate for yourself, because I wasn't when I was, you know, that age. So, like, currently right now, I'm in an acting class, and I won't be discreet. Can't stand the teacher. He's terrible.
Sorry, teach.
He contradicts himself every day, but one of the big things that he did was we have to do a thing called an activity while we're doing these exercises, and the activity is supposed to be difficult. So I brought in a comb, and I was parting my hair for cornrows, and he was like, I don't see the difficulty in this. And I was like, you don't see the difficulty in braiding your own hair? So that's when I was like, okay, anti-woman, anti-black, sure. Fast forward, girls, well, last week, he told a girl to do an activity. He was like, you know what, have you ever tried to do a French twist to your own hair?
See, you
it's
can't
really
make this
difficult.
Shit up.
And you can't, but I had been calling him out. I was like, nope. Wrong, you said something different last week. He can't stand me. Because when he told her to French braid her hair, I start cackling in a very black way in the corner. And he was like, what did I say? I was like, you told me that wasn't difficult enough. And he ended up apologizing to us in the class. And I felt like I taught the younger kids in the class, say something if it doesn't make sense in the moment.
Yeah.
Call it out because it needs to happen. But I wasn't able to do that when I was in my 20s or 30s or, you know,
I got to give the credit to my moms.
Yeah.
Literally.
Like, shout out moms.
I mean, I can't take any credit for that because especially, like, again, I grew up in, like, rural Texas. So you're talking, I, like, grew up near roads called, like, White Settlement. And, like, ooh. I mean, it's still called White Settlement.
The road? The road. The not street even creative.
It's called White Settlement.
It's not even creative
we
supremacy.
We didn't have paved roads. It's not creative. That's the thing. White supremacy is boring. If you're going to be racist,
very
at least be fun.
Be funny.
You know, spicy
so
white.
So basic with your racism.
It's just, you know, and so, like, I grew up, like, you're talking, like, in the middle of nowhere. You pass a few hundred cows to go. Like, you know, we couldn't get, like, food delivery to our house growing up. That was the totally foreign concept to me. And teachers, whether it was at private schools or public schools, would do things that were consistently so racist. And my mom was always so bold in certain ways that she would handle things where she would, like, bust up into the school she needed to.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking fully bust in and be like, what happened? And once I didn't tell her everything because I would get stressed about it, I had anxiety. We didn't really understand what anxiety was at the time. And so she would tell me things to say to defend myself. And so there were times where, like, this one teacher I had, like, late middle school, early high school, she stopped the whole class to be like, is your hair real? I got braids in. I came in with braids. And my mom had told me to tell her, like, does your carpet match your drapes? And so
whoa.
What I said instead. This
I
is
can't
my
wait
mama.
To meet your mom.
Listen, when I tell you this woman, guns blazing, like, has taught so much of us so much about ourselves. Instead, I said, it's magic. Because I was like, and then she was like, but, and I said, it's magic.
That's right.
I was like, a girl like this overnight. Oh, because when you're going to
you know, I actually used to say that all the time, too, when I would have weaves and, like, it's like a form of shaming.
Yes.
And now they wear, of course, they appropriate our stuff.
They've
been wearing it.
This
and I
true.
Used to be like, no, it's magic. We
yes.
have this special grease we can put in our hair to make it curly,
yes.
straight, long, and short overnight. Don't you wish you could do it? And I used to be like, but white people can't do that.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what are they going to do, argue with you?
Right.
Yeah, Sarah Jessica Parker taught me that white women use tracks. I didn't know white women was putting tracks in their hair till Sex and the City. I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially Southern white ladies. Oh, they be doing the little the poof, and all of
the
it.
The tease and clip.
It's just, and that's why I would have told your teacher, I would have been like, you come over here and you do this.
Oh, I want to be like, you just
make straight go ahead. And don't break the comb. Yeah.
You know?
Don't break the comb.
Well, speaking of tracks.
Ooh, yes.
Look at that transition.
Okay, DJ. Go, DJ. That's my DJ.
So, Beyonce.
Who?
Beyonce, the queen of the internet.
Yes.
Mother to Blue, Rumi, and...
Sir, yes, sir.
Is it just three?
Yeah. So, she let Vice President Harris use her song, Freedom.
Yes.
Thoughts?
It's a Negro spiritual. It's a modern-day Negro spiritual that I can feel in my spine when she says... I'm going to keep running because the winner don't quit on themselves. And I'm like, flip the table, punch a wall.
Like,
you know, that beat, oh my gosh, I love it so much. And I also love that she kind of like sent some flowers and was like, you can use my song. Meanwhile, Trump has a Wikipedia page of all the songs that people were like, stop it. There's a whole Wikipedia page. There's like 30 artists on this page that said cease and desist.
I gotta go on.
You know who else got a cease and desist? Not to take this off Beyonce, because this name should never be mentioned in the same sentence as Beyonce.
True.
But Amber Rose got a cease and desist from that whack song she put out. Moving back to Beyonce, though.
Yes. Once again, who? Right. Amber what?
Amber what?
Beyonce? So I'm loving it. I love it. I'm very excited about this being like the theme.
Yeah.
It's so black.
It's so black.
It's so black.
And so true. Mm-hmm. We do need freedom.
Absolutely.
Freedom is on the line, I feel like. Freedom for bodily autonomy, freedom to think for yourselves, freedom to just be able to live and breathe as a black woman, as a person in this country, I feel is really under threat. So I feel, it's just like, it's almost like Beyonce knew we were gonna need the song.
Mm-hmm. She a prophet.
But see, then the you know what's funny is sometimes, I don't know if you're, well, I mean, you know Feminista Jones.
Yes.
Like Dr. Taylor, obsessed with that woman. When I tell you, that's one bad bitty. she showed online, her and Dr. Jen Jackson were talking about how frustrating it is sometimes to be like an abolitionist and someone in this space, because in 2016, when that came out, I got to see the concert live.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, so excited. I was like, this is amazing. Like she did the water stage.
I know.
That water stage.
Was kicking at it.
Yes.
And I was like, this makes me feel so powerful. But then not long after, she wore the Tiffany diamond. And I was like, my heart was like broken. And it's one of those dichotomies, I feel like, what it is to be black and what it is to be a black woman, of not asking for too much, not expecting, because Dr. Jackson talks about this, where she's like, that's an artist, and I'm not expecting an artist necessarily who did not commit themselves to deliberately being like about liberation to do everything on that level. And that doesn't mean we can't hold them accountable, but we can have mixed feelings. And so I think that's how I feel when I think of it, because it's like so much being, again, like a, you know, a little black girl from Texas who grew up like doing all of the country things. Every time like Beyonce or Megan Thee Stallion do anything, it's like, those are my peoples, mm-hmm. you know? Like, I feel so seen, but then sometimes when you see them doing things that are in an interest that is not for the interest of all their people, it raises like this obnoxious philosophical question of like, what am I allowed to feel here?
Mm.
Because it makes me feel so excited, but then it breaks my heart to know certain things and to see certain things. And I feel like that's what it is to be like the struggle of a killjoy, is like, you're like, this is amazing. And then you're like, but who's being harmed by like the other actions that are being taken in this scenario and in this situation? And how do we, this is a question I'm continually learning myself even, is how do we celebrate? How do we find the laughter in this? But how do we also say, hey, like, if you want to step into this and this, like, we have to hold you accountable for like these actions. And like, you have to do better on this side, because we can't scare people in the name of democracy.
Yeah.
You know, we can't scare people into doing things, because that's not fair. And at the end of the day, a lot of people that are harmed, they'd rather just back out entirely than be involved in that. And I hate to be that person, but
no,
then it's like...
I think this is what this election is gonna actually be about, right?
Yes.
Is I think this is an important part of the conversation, is that I always say, as an adult, I do things every day that I don't want to do and like to do, but it's part of living. And part of why I like democracy, part of why I engage in voting, is that I can also hold these people accountable, right?
Yes.
So I think that there is the ability, two things can be true at the same time. Two opposites can be true at the same time. We can celebrate Queen Bee, celebrate the vice president, and still be like, oh, I wish like this was different about her track record, or this was this. And I think the point is that you don't just say, well, forget her and cast her aside, like so many people do with black women.
Yes.
But you bring them in. Like, we started this conversation, like, how do we call white women into this moment? But it's like, how do we actually, folks who have questions about Vice President Harris right now, how do we call them into the conversation and say, let's talk about her record as a prosecutor. Let's talk about her record on the border. And then at the end of the day, you get to make your decision. That's what's important about democracy. My thing though is, like, I just want to have a democracy to be able to do it.
I would like to have a democracy because if the other guy gets elected, we're not going to be able to hold nobody accountable for nothing.
Yeah.
So I think the point is to be able to have someone that would listen to the issues that people want to bring up, that would hire someone like you. Mind you, I'm gonna check in with you before I do anything publicly moving forward to make sure that it's okay. Because you know.
Right.
Like, Joyelle,
help me not get canceled.
Don't do that. don't wear that, Joyelle. You know, I'm gonna check in with you, but we need to be able to hold people accountable, and we're not gonna be able to do that in a fascist authoritarian state.
Yeah. You just brought me back when you said that concert. I just had to say, like, that concert changed my life. That show told me I could dare to fill a stadium. I am allowed to have that dream. I was still working for President Obama, and I remember, and that was when a lot of police violence was happening. I think it was the summer when Philando Castile and Alton Sterling were murdered, and that was a lot of the work I had done. And so I was feeling so heavy in the moment, but that concert liberated me, actually. Like, that music said, girl, you could do whatever you want. If a little girl from Texas can dare to dream to do this, you could do it by speaking, you could do it by writing, you could do it however you want. And I think that Kamala Harris's presence is doing that for other women.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anything from having representation anywhere has always been inspirational. You know, I mentioned Princess Tiana when I saw that beautiful black skin animated. I was like, I've never seen this before. And I'm crying, you know, about it. That matters. Black Panther having a black superhero. You know, we see this and you're like, oh, I can do that too. I can do that too. It's inspirational.
It really, really is.
I think we are building something here that is going to be hugely impactful, not just this year, but in so many years to come.
Being a part of a very historical moment, like having some really critical conversations.
Yeah, debate is crazy.
Modern Whole Media seems to be supremely focused on bringing real people into real conversation about real issues, and I want to be where real people are.
In this moment, I am finding hope, and
the love that I have for my children
is the next generation.
The black joy that I'm seeing around the country.
We need to tell our own stories. We need to not just be consumers, we need to shape the narrative.
The political climate that we're in, man, like having some really dope conversations is really important.
That gives me hope for tomorrow that we're gonna be all right.
We're remembering the life of Sonya Massey. After calling for help, the 36-year-old was shot and killed by Illinois police. The sheriff's deputy, Sean Grayson, has been fired and charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder. 1 second, we're celebrating the possibility of a black woman becoming the president. And the very next second, we are confronted by the danger we're in constantly in America. How do we manage both realities at the same time?
I think for me, it's like the same thing. What I spend so much time focusing on teaching people is nuance. Like, it's what I spend the most time talking to kids about, adults about. It's the same nuance of like it being important to recognize like the ways in which we have to like hold somebody that's a candidate for president accountable for like the ways they engage in certain things, like with what's going on in like Israel and Gaza. And the same ways in which that we have to have the nuances of understanding that like unity, like, you know, you said a little bit on that earlier, like what is unity? How does that exist? So I think it's a matter of being able to balance existing in between acknowledging the life, being able to feel the pain for that life that has been lost, while also recognizing the fact that we actually have a lot we can do about it. We tend to feel really like draconian, and I see a lot of narratives online about people being like, the world's never been this sad, we've never been this divided. And I made a video that was kind of like silly but realistic of People that I know, and especially like some of the pastors that I work with, had been saying like, we've never disagreed so much. And I was like, people literally used to stone you to death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when you ate a food that they found offensive in public, like people they killed you for very stupid, minute things. They made you fight to the death because you looked at their wife funny. So
slavery.
All the slavery.
Yeah, like Trail of Tears.
You know, like it's like people really did not have the room to disagree and do these things today. And so it's not that things aren't happening. And in some ways, statistically, we do see like the worsening of police violence. I think, if I remember correctly, D-Ray talked about the fact that last year was the most deadly year for police violence on record in the United States since they started collecting the data in the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, right, like we have more visibility that's happening. I think a lot more people are getting engaged on it. So it's being able to have that balance between, I am really upset. Like I didn't read the story. I was like, I read two details just so I knew kind of what had happened. And I shut off everything else. And I cried a little bit. And then I said, okay, this makes me, quite frankly, I mean, we're allowed to curse, right? Like, yeah. This made me really fucking furious. You know, like this made me enraged. And so every time I feel this rage, how do I take that rage and do it in her name? How do I take that rage and use it? When Cynthia Candia Bailey passed away in January or so, died by suicide with everything going on and being bullied by a professional institution. Mm. When I tell you, it was the most rage I'd felt in a while. Mm. Like I feel a lot of pain for everybody, and Pisces, some whiny and like all those things. And the next day I started a report on like talking about like racism in education. And every single day that I get a story from somebody back like that, every single day that I'm able to do that, every single day that I run into a person, especially like a white person in that type of a position that does something to a Sonia Massey, that does something like that to a Candia Bailey, I feel and I look at them and I'm like, I'm gonna get you. Because at the end of the day, like you don't get to cause this harm and exist without consequences for that harm. And I and all these other people doing this work are going to make sure that you feel the responsibility and the pain of what you caused. Mm. Whether it's me doing it, whether it's God doing it, like somebody is gonna get you for that. And I can do my part to make sure that you don't get to exist comfortably while you do that. So I think for me, that's how I balance it, is being able to, and I'm not perfect at it, but letting myself feel it and then feel while I move forward. Mm.
Wow, you looked me in my eyes when you said that.
Yeah.
I felt it. I believe you.
Yeah. Like on a therapist couch.
Yeah. I was like, I ain't do nothing.
Right. You ain't me. I was like, you gonna feel it, baby.
No, I mean, but that is, for me, the reason that we're seeing all these things and thinking we're more divided now, we just got social media.
Yeah.
We just have more communication. That's all it is, mass communication that has let us see what's happening. And I want to say thank God for body cam footage, you know, because if they hadn't released that, they told her family that she had committed suicide.
I mean, This is a hard subject for anyone to talk to. That police violence was my portfolio when I worked at the White House. I started working there a month before Michael Brown was killed, and the PTSD that I experienced. Mm. I didn't have the emotional capacity those 3 years I was there to actually feel the harm and the rage that so many people. I had to just keep my head. Well, I thought I had to just keep my head down and move forward. And when Trump won and then I got out of the job, the amount of PTSD I had from seeing that. So I didn't watch, I trust the sources that I know put out factual information to understand what is happening, but I did not feel like I needed to watch the video to understand the horror that it was. I don't know what, I feel almost numb because I also am going back to 2020 when massive people were in the streets protesting for George Floyd, the outrage that we were facing, some of the progress that we made by like banning no-knock warrants and, you know, doing things like that, but also like passing DEI initiatives. And then literally 4 years later, all of the DEI initiatives are being rolled back. They're using DEI as a derogatory term to talk about the woman we were just celebrating, the vice president. And then there's a black woman murdered, and so much is happening. It's like, where is the outrage here too? So I'm feeling a little disoriented in this moment and not knowing how to process. I just, my wish and hope and prayer, the only thing I can do is send prayers and positive energy to her family who are going to be suffering and dealing with this trauma, and hoping that this tragedy leads to triumph where we have policy changes and police violence ends, period.
Yeah, and we hold them accountable for the things that they do, because mental illness runs in my family, and my grandmother was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and I can't imagine her having an episode and somebody shooting her in the face for it.
Yeah. Like,
that is amazing. You know what a mental episode looks like. We all know. I ride the subway in New York City. We know what mental episodes look like. Mm-hmm. That's why we need to be focusing on how to help people versus criminalizing it. Because, sir, he did that because she had a boiling pot of water. He had legs. They could have just walked out the door.
Yeah.
And a gun.
You have legs and a gun. And a counter in between you and this woman. It was ridiculous. I watched the footage by accident because I just opened my phone, and PTSD is right.
Yeah.
You know, so
my grandfather was a paranoid schizophrenic, and every day my grandmother would get him like dressed and ready to go, and he would go spend all day in downtown Youngstown. And we lived in a small, generally small town, so people knew our family. So, you know, if they saw him downtown, maybe having an episode or whatever. He always had money. He always, you know, wasn't begging folks for anything. Not that there's anything wrong with, like, asking for a little help on the street. But we're lucky that nothing ever happened to him. We talk about that all the time. And when I think about, like, New York City and criminalizing just having a mental illness, it just... There are other ways. We know the solutions. This is the thing. This is where the rage comes in. Is we know the solutions. We have to have the courage to implement them and to do that. And the only way to do that is if we actually see all people, no matter what their ability, disability, age, gender, sexual identity are, and any other identifying demographics, with humanity at the end of the day. And that's what I feel like has been lost.
Kindness.
And break down the stereotypes. Cause like I'm somebody who like I have a PTSD diagnosis, I have anxiety like professionally, and I have, I don't remember like a laundry list. I have ADHD and potentially like ADHD. And like the reason why, I mean, people can't see it, but I got my working dog down here, and like having to learn how to have like a visible marker of like, something's wrong with you was like a very, you know, a very interesting thing, because like when you have like a service animal and you're dressing up in a pink suit, right? People, I went somewhere the other day and this white man like bumped me, and then I was like, excuse me, like that's rude. Like, you know, I'm going to this disability section, and he said, well, you're moving quite fast to be disabled. And I was like, sir, please live in my shoes for a day. Please understand how it feels to have to like be sucked back into a harmful moment. Like, you know, like I wouldn't wish it on people necessarily, but having to like work through that with the privilege and the way that I look and the way that I'm able to function is so important. And that's why I like shove the conversations down people's throat. Every time we have an accessibility issue, I spend like a good 30 minutes telling the person why what they did wasn't okay accessibility wise. Especially like in Black churches, like certain bars, restaurants, other stuff. And they eventually almost all end up listening to me, because I will just stand there and keep talking to them until they listen, and it's relentless. But I know that it's helped to kind of prevent that kind of thing. And on top of that, like we have a really big moment, right? For people, again, who do or don't disagree with Kamala Harris, not to like tie it all the way back over there and bring it back, but like this is a big moment to like bring visibility and to say, hey, like this is gonna be a really historic moment. So while we have this historic moment, like Joe and like these other people, let's look back. Like the George Floyd Act never got signed in.
Right.
We can push for
push
that.
For and it.
Say, hey,
yes. Like, or even more.
Yeah, more.
That's the baseline. Like it's not just restore Roe, it's like expand access.
That's the bare minimum, that's what I said.
But I also feel like, you know, you shouldn't have to have a visible marker for your disability.
You
like I remember one day, maybe a year ago on social media, I made a post. It was Mental Health Awareness Day or week or a month, I'm not sure. But I said, like, you know, as someone who has suffered with anxiety and PTSD, I have learned to like find my peace, find my balance, and have to have the practices. And so I shouldn't have to tell you, or if I say to you, like, I am a person with a disability, it's like, I don't have to justify. Like, first of all, the law does not require me to have to justify that. And it's, and it's what I'm telling you. And so take it at face value, and you never know what somebody is going through. You never know like the full story around somebody. And we make so many assumptions about so many things. And so I don't fault people when they don't have a full understanding about accessibility, but I do fault you once you know you don't do better. Okay, so before we end, because we talk about some heavy stuff here, we talk about some light stuff here, we talk about everything in between. But we like to give people our flowers. Give them while they are here to enjoy them. So I'll start. The Olympics started on my birthday. Leo baby, July 26th. That Al is a Joelle shout out. I got that from her. And I want to give a shout out flowers to Coco Gauff, Simone Biles, so many others that names I'm omitting, the women's basketball team, all the women athletes, particularly the black women athletes. Women's sports is having its moment in America. It has been having its moment globally, and I cannot wait for these women to pop out
and show.
Show out.
People.
Sometimes you gotta pop out and show out.
So I can't wait for them to excel and bring back so many gold medals.
Yeah.
I love that.
You give them flowers.
Oh, okay, I get to give some flowers. I want to first give flowers to you all for having me here.
Oh,
I really appreciate that, for bringing, you know, young, rambunctious black women into a space and allowing for us to, like, you know, pee-pee and be
not
together.
Not rambunctious.
And, you know, I kept it together today.
You're going to be a little bit...
I want to give flowers to my mom, of course. Like, I have to continually give her credit because, again, the woman has just amazing... I always like to honor every black woman educator that I continually learn from. I bring up the names of like Feminista Jones, Dr. Taylor a lot, Dr. Jen Jackson, Erica Hart, Bria Baker, like so many people that I wish I could all have like constantly with me, because those are people who are, some of them are mutuals, they're people who I learn from, they're people who will say, hey, like, I really don't like this. Or will say, hey, like, you're not doing this in the mindset that you are saying you want to do it in. And I really think that's so important. So I give them all of their flowers all the time, because those are some bad biddies. Like, just that's it. So, yeah, I love them.
I'm going to give my flowers to Joteka.
Oh, yes.
And all of the women with Win With Black Women.
Yes.
Who organized that call and had us having a church service for almost 5 hours. Last Friday, was it Sunday? Sunday
don't matter.
Night? It don't matter. Whatever day it was.
Those are the vibes know. Can carry you through the year.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Not a real church show. It's not 5 hours.
Oh, exactly. and people sang, and Jennifer Lewis sang to us. You know, it was so beautiful. So
yeah,
my flowers are to them.
That's beautiful. All right, y'all. We have actually come to the end of our time. I'm so sad. We will have you back for sure. Alencia will be back with us when she stops globetrotting around the world with her fancy self. Always. It's been Wait a Minute, and check out our show next week, and have a great week until we see you again.
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
We booted it.